Welcome back to Queer Coco. It's me, Bele. I know it's been a minute, and I really don't have any excuses this time except that I was lazy and procrastinating. But I'm back, and I had the pleasure of interviewing one of my closest friends, Shannon JJ Williams. That was so weird to say. For the few of you who don't know who Shannon is, Shannon is a creative director, makeup artist, content creator, hairstylist to the stars, all of that. And he's also known as Hair God. I met Shannon when I was quote-unquote dancing for Runway Dance Crew back in 2010. So we've known each other for 11 years. And in the past year, he's been my go-to for advice with content creating and just all that kind of stuff when it comes to the podcast and how to market and things like that. And he's been so generous with his time. Taking his time to do this interview with me. I've been wanting to get him on for a while, and thanks to lockdown, we don't say that very often, but he spared a few minutes for me, so here's that interview. Welcome to Queer Coco. So it's me, Bele. We haven't been on here for a long time, but joining me today is one of my closest friends, Shannon JJ Williams. You may know him as... But yeah, welcome to the podcast.
Oh my God, babe. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited. This is literally like my fifth ever Zoom meeting / working thing, which I'm really excited about. So thanks for having me.
Oh, how have you been going in lockdown?
Babe, like, actually I'm loving it, to be honest. So yeah. We were on was it 8 days?
Oh, seven.
8 day lockdown?
Oh, yeah, eight.
So it's about seven. Yeah, so it's 8, and then the announcement was this morning. So we're finally out of lockdown.
So yeah.
Thank gosh. We're allowed to go back to work, which is exciting. But with my industry, obviously, because I do photo shoots and I freelance, once it's rescheduled, it's just like...
Yeah.
Now you just wait for the bookings to come through. But other than that, actually, I've been working on my online business, which is coming along good. So just been chilling, babe. How about you?
Yeah, good. Yeah. I think I got a bit crazy towards the end, but I'm okay.
Boy, since we all are.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do. I know you did touch on it a little bit, but yeah.
Well, my name is Shannon James Julian Williams, and I'm a hairstylist / makeup artist, and I've been in the business for about 13-14 years now. Oh my God, that just sounds so old, but she's experienced. But I've been in the industry for about 13-14 years, and I came from a salon. Actually, I was doing my apprenticeship, and I started at 12 different salons, and every single salon was like, okay, you can go clean the toilet now. And they'd be like, you can go on a lunch break. And I would never show back up. I'd be like, say, I am out, girl. 12 salons. Every single one of them did it. Because I just wanted hands-on. I just wanted to hurry up, finish my apprenticeship. I thought it'd be like 3-4 years. I ended up training for about 6 years. And to be honest, I'm still training. So I was in salon. I cut eye color. But then I wanted to transition into more fashion editorial work. I've always just loved like photographic work. I've always loved magazine shoots. I've just always loved turning something that's basic into something that's like luxurious and high fashion. And just like, you know, it exudes sex appeal. Like it's just strong. That's my like type of aesthetic. So it was just, you know, I would always train, I would always do photo shoots Wednesday to Sunday, literally every single day. I'd be like, you know, calling up photographers, makeup artists to collab together. Back then, Instagram was just starting up. So I didn't really know what the platform actually was. I literally just thought it was a photographic, like just chuck your photos on. Little did I know it was actually a business platform. So back in those days, you just didn't know, you know, it was just like a new platform. What do? You just chuck all your photos, all your drunk photos with the filters, the borders around the outside zone. No, you're showing our age. No, nothing. Girl, I know. Don't say that. I'm still young, but yeah, so our portfolio was actually shooting professional photographs. So it was actually going into studios and it was actually creating that type of shape and that silhouette on actual models and getting the professional photos and the professional photos you put on your Instagram. Now times have changed, obviously, and now everyone just loves more BTS and more content. So all that professional stuff I still love, but it just doesn't get the reach as what the BTS and all that type of stuff do. So now I'm also a content creator slash creative director slash hairstylist and makeup artist. Did that answer the question? I forgot what the question was.
No, that answered it perfectly well.
Yeah, so a lot of it was training. And I reckon about 8 years of me training, I was getting about $650 a week. And if I didn't have all my friends that would, you know, shut me at the club, shut me at the bar, buy my alcohol, you know, always have my back. You know, it was a really hard 10 years of not getting paid. But now, you know, you just got to push through all that. And obviously time will come and then you'll start getting the bookings, you start getting the clientele, and then Bob's your uncle, you start getting money.
Period.
Everyone loves the money, you know. But like a lot of stuff that I've done, I reckon it would be about 70-80% of my work has been unpaid. And it's how you market and advertise the free stuff. It's how you're going to get advertising clients, paid advertising clients, etc.
So you have such a signature look. Drop some of your celebrity clients that you've worked for.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so it's so funny because I've done a few, but my first ever celebrity client that I ever got was Danny Minogue. And I know, girl, so I might have been just out of my apprenticeship and she had seen my portfolio. And as I said before, that you need a professional portfolio so that clients can see your work, exactly like what Instagram is right now, but on a website platform. So she ended up seeing me in Melbourne, I think she was. And then there was two artists that she had chosen and she ended up choosing me. So that was my first ever celebrity clientele. And she was off to, I can't even remember, it was that long ago, but it was really exciting. I ended up getting another one of my apprentices to come on board to help assist. So I looked legit, but really she literally only had about like 3 tools in her suitcase back then. So acting like I was all high fash. I literally had no tools, I had nothing, but I was rocking up there like I knew it. And I think it's more about confidence and it's about more personality, how you connect with people is, you know, you could do like amazing hair, but if you don't have that personality and that connection, say ya. Yeah. You don't get the job. I've done so many like Sony Australian artists, from Jessica Malboy to Samantha Jade, the Dummy M. And then I've done Margot Robbie. So I did Margot Robbie, which is exciting. That's probably my biggest, I reckon, celebrity in the movie world. And then I do a lot of social media influencers, from Tammy Hembrough. There's just so much that I just can't even name.
Yeah.
The social media influencers. But I've also done like Chris Hemsworth's wife. But no, to me, they're just people. And a funny story I'm going to actually tell you about was Chris Hemsworth's wife. Her name is Elsa Pataky. So I ended up rocking up not knowing her actual background and what she actually does. So I went through her Instagram and she had a lot of like Vogue magazine images. Like she had loads of modeling images. So straight away, I just assumed that she was a model. So she was off to some festival and she wanted these hair extension braids. So we're braiding her hair. And then we kept pulling her hair and she's literally like that. And I looked at her at her face and I literally was just like, babe, I'm so sorry, you must be so used to it being a model at that. And she's like, yeah, babe. She's like, yeah. And then my mate Trevor, who was behind me, looks up at me and he's like, and I was like, oh my god, I can just say that she's this model in front of her, like, what a bot. And but she was absolutely like, she was fine with it. She was just like, so like, she's cracking up. But ever since then, I learned to actually research the client and actually know who they are, because obviously your girl over here didn't know who she was she?
I mean, I guess that works in your favor too, because you're like...
But you know what? It really does, because like, I don't go in knowing who they really are. I just literally feel like they're people.
Yeah.
They're people, they're individuals. Obviously, they've worked harder and obviously they've got this massive profile. But I've just always been a person to be like, girl, they're just people. They're just real. I'm going to tell you another story. When I was backstage in New York Fashion Week, I ended up working with this product company, and the model sat down and I was doing her hair, just cracking up with her, like absolutely laughing. Can't even remember what about. And a fruit platter came along to her. Then she had all this champagne come to her, and like everything was coming to her. And I was like, girl, you VIP girl. We cracked up laughing, not knowing she was actually Kim Kardashian's best friend. Zoing! And she's like, man, do you want some? I was like, yeah, girl. Like, I'm eating, not even knowing who she is until the actual show had finished. And my manager now, at this day, Zuby, she was there in the New York Fashion Week watching her, yeah? She's just like, oh my God, did you see her? And I was like, babe, I did her hair. And she's like, what the fuck? That's Kim Kardashian's best friend. And I was like, girl! Didn't even know, girl. I would have gotten photos. Oh, actually, I did get photos of her. But I was just like a normal person. And it was just like, you know, I think I was just me. I was just myself. I was, I had, you know, the personality was there. But yeah, I think it's just to deal with like, yeah, I think what you were trying to say before was it's probably good that I sort of don't really know who they are, because then I'm not like nervous. And then I feel like if you're nervous, you actually don't perform as well as you can when you're just like jamming, you know.
So for those who don't know, I've known Shannon for 11 years now. Shannon's a dancer as well, so I'm not a dancer, but we met in a dance group called Runway. We've spoken about it in previous episodes. It's been so long, bro. Like,
hey, it was so long. I remember Ella, who just approached me. We had been friends through church, I think. But we weren't really
church.
And then I just... Church, girl. She went to church. For those who actually don't know, my background was I grew up in a really as Pentecostal. And my dad took children church. And my mom was a song leader. So we grew up in like religious, like real, like 100%, like every Sunday, like you went to church. So this was after, I reckon, high school. So... our parents are like, you know, you can make your own decision if you want to go to church or not. And then my best friend at the time was sort of going there, but I think it was more so just like to network with people. And it was young, brown, Pacific Islanders, Maldives that would go to this church. And I was just like, oh my God, I want to go. Like just to be in that, like, you know, be in that world. So I ended up going to church, but more so for the networking side of things. And that's how I met Ella. I met her through church, and then she wanted to do this whole dance crew thing. And I remember the first ever dance rehearsal was when we were in Roman Street, Parklands, and there was four of us. I can't even remember, or maybe three of us. I literally can't even remember, but then started the group, and then you walked in. And I was like, hey, girl. You're like, hey, girl. And you're like, hey, girl.
I was so shy, girl. but I'm still shy. But
I feel like you're still shy, but you're definitely growing out of your comfort zone as an artist, as a person, which is amazing. But yeah, I really think that like I was still trying to find myself. And I think we all were, to be honest. Like,
yeah, we all were.
Because as long you were shy, I was sort of shy.
Yeah.
Do you reckon I was shy?
Yeah, you were. You're definitely not who you are today.
No, definitely. No, I was shy, but I was still trying to find myself as a person.
Yeah.
So I feel like being around you guys, it sort of opened me up to a different type of world, a different type of... Because obviously I was brought up in a really religious family. So it was just like, oh my God, there's this another side of this world that I actually don't know. And I'm actually really like eager to explore it more.
Girl, and she did. What was funny was we were all, I think most of, you weren't out at the time, but you were like, you were doing it.
Yeah, I, do you know what? So I wasn't out. So I reckon I was more comfortable around you guys, around the same people, around the same circle. So it was more like a safe space for me to be like, to just let loose.
Yeah.
And I found that back in the day, from like when I was like 17 all the way to like I reckon about 25, alcohol was like literally my friend. It was just like, you know, it just erases everything. It's just like, I didn't tell any of my best friends or my girlfriends, who are so supportive now. But back in the day, I was just so scared and just so nervous to come out to them because of my upbringing. You know, you were just always judged for everything you did, pretty much. It was more of a safe space. It was more of a safe space that I was just like, in. So that's why I was like confident, and then my alcohol erased everything. So I was just like, you know, let's just get drunk. I'm myself, this drunk person, like, because I know everyone's drunk. And then the next day you can wake up and be like, oh, I don't remember. But half the time I did remember. Well, not all the time, but like sometimes. And I'd just be like, you know, one time, like one day, I won't need to really do this. I'll be happy with myself and I don't need to hide. And, you know, obviously now she's a free bird, but yeah, going through all those stages of my 20s were actually really hard, but nourishing at the same time, especially because I have such an amazing circle of friends now. For example, yourself, look at you. Me. Coco with their podcast and being amazing in the industry. But yeah, I feel like all of us around us, we're winners in different types of industries, which is amazing because we grow from each other, we give each other advice, and it's just mad.
But you raised an interesting point where you said that you see yourself one day being able to be yourself, which I'd never saw for myself. Like when I saw you, when I met you guys, I never thought that I'd ever come out. Did you actually see that for yourself, coming out? And
always, I was struggling. I wanted to come out so long ago. But for those who don't know, I come from a background of, you know, my parents are Māori, so if they don't know that background, it's like loads of like drinking, it's like loads of like violence. It's not saying that we had like a violent family, but just you sort of brought up with it. So you got all your aunties, your uncles drinking, and then back in those days, obviously they're so insecure, you know, so what they're feeding us as kids, they actually don't know they're doing damage. And that's what my parents were doing, not knowing. And I don't resent them or anything. They've grown so much from me, you know, coming out to them. But that's why it was so hard for me to come out, because every single day was either a homophobic slur or just something that was really like, oh my God, don't do that because this. And then as a little kid, you're like, oh my God. So I would just always hide. I just wouldn't be myself. So I wanted to come out ages ago, but yeah, it was just really hard for me. But you know, you do it. It's always timing, to be honest.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about how you eventually came out. What happened? How did that come
about? Oh my God. So you know what, as I said, everything was just built up inside of me. And I remember this one time at work, I was working at my hair salon with my best friend Lika, and I just looked at her and I just started bawling. I was just like, oh my gosh, I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I'm just not myself. I've come to a point where all this anger, all this hate, like me not being my authentic self, it's just bashing me up. I've got so much stress. I've got so much anxiety. I just need to get out of this. And I just couldn't get on a phone call with my parents to tell me that. So I had to literally be like, I have to send it in a text message. And I remember just writing it. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I just remember writing it and just being like, when I send this text, like all my emotions and all my anxiety, sorry.
It's okay. Take your time.
You know, it's just kind of like, hopefully, like, leave my system of of being this angry person, you know, and not being my true authentic self. And I never hated my parents, but I just never understood why they were like that. And so I had to send it in a text message. So I sent it in a text message, and from that day on, I've never been so like free in my life. It was just coming home to them, which is the scary part. But when I went home, they just broke down. They literally broke down. They just didn't know the extent of how they were hurting their kid. And they were just so apologetic. And I obviously don't blame them, because obviously they come from a really hard upbringing.
Of course. Yeah.
And they obviously didn't know, but yeah, it was really hard. And I told my best friend, and my best friend, I just remember my best friend hugging me, and she was just like, girl, you're gonna be okay. Like, your parents love you. They're always gonna be here for you. So yeah, that happened. And then I was free. I was just like, you know what? Oh my God, I'm 27. I've now come out to my parents. To be honest, I still haven't actually really come out to my my brothers, but obviously it went around the family circle, you know, and obviously I feel like time will come where I'll just like, oh, you know, I'm gay, right? they'll be like duh boo. But yeah, it's just really for me an emotional thing to go through, especially because when I saw my mom crying, and my, you know, my dad always saying that he was there for me, because I actually thought my dad would be really like, you know, get the F out of here and just, you know, and not accept me as his son, but it was total opposite. He actually understood where I was coming from. And ever since then, we started growing as parents, and we created more of a stronger bond, me coming out, because I was educating my dad on, you know, gay, not even gay rights, like stuff that you say that you shouldn't say.
Yeah.
That he actually didn't understand. Like, and I know he was learning, because he would always be like, oh, I'm coming back from yoga and I met these two gay guys. And I was like, oh, like, awesome. And he was like, yeah, they're really cool. But that's his way of seeing, you know, that he's working on him being, you know, non-homophobic. And then I turned around to him and I was just like, oh, you know, Dad, you don't have to say that you're, you know, there's two gay guys. You can just say they're two humans. But it's his way of showing that he's trying to work towards him not being homophobic and stuff, which is so beautiful. And then my mom, I remember my mom saying, so son, why are you gay? And I was like, Mom, why are you straight? She's like, 'cause I was born with it.
Yeah.
And I was like, exactly. Like, I was born with this. Like, and this is me. This is who I am. And I'm sorry, but she was born this way, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just been a whole learning curve from my 27, I'm now 33, of just educating them on, you know, not saying things that they, you know, they don't say it in a way where it's hurtful, but when they say it is hurtful. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They don't know that they're saying hurtful things.
Yeah.
They just say it out loud, but they don't know what they're actually saying is damaging. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that happened. And when I was 27, I just had an urge of experiencing gay culture and gay life, because I hadn't done it in my 18 to 26 years of age. And I just felt like I had lost some of my years of not experimenting and not going to places, because everyone was saying, you know, don't go to those, you know, whatever clubs and stuff like that. So when I was 27, I started going to, I think it might've been 28 or 29. I went to my first ever Mardi Gras. And that was the time that I had met Rocky.
Yeah.
Who's now one of our girls.
Shout out to Rocky.
And she had taught me, because she also went through the same experience. We were going to obviously the same clubs and stuff like that. And she used to hate on me. And I just always thought that in the club, because I was just being my mad self, just dancing. Obviously I wasn't out, but I was still like dancing and just being myself. And obviously she was going through her own experiences of life. where she would used to hate and say stuff like that. But when I ended up meeting her in Sydney, I was actually really scared of her because she actually didn't know the damage that she had done to me.
Right.
And when she comes up, she's like, Shannon, and gives me a big hug. I was just like, oh my God, like, I thought you hated me.
You because, like me? You know,
yeah, I know. I was like, you like me? And she's like, what are you talking about? And then when I explained to her about the situations back at the nightclubs where you used to always yell at me or, like, you know, say really bad, hurtful things, she actually didn't know that she was doing that, but it was because it's her insecurities of me being, you know, yeah, this fun person. She was just like, oh my God, like, who is that?
Yeah.
But now we're best friends, and obviously she came out in Sydney, so she had her own story, and we just hit it off. And then she took me to my first ever Mardi Gras, and I remember just walking into that thinking how beautiful and how amazing all these people are. But coming from a background where it was just like always hate, oh, these people. And I just always thought that they were that type of people. But rocking up and just being my own free self, yeah, and experiencing it for myself, it was just like, this is actually really beautiful and actually really amazing. Everyone's so, there's just no hate, there's just no fighting, everyone's positive.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a mad time. And then once I got a little taste of that,
she was off.
Girl, she was off the chop.
I can relate to that though. Like,
yeah,
because of a lot of the things that your parents say, or just people in your life say, that like stick with you. And so you don't realize that you're projecting it on other people in the community. So you're just like, ooh, look at him being all out there. And look at him being so confident and being such a girl, like, and he's
100%, 100% girl. Which is so, and it's sad. Just like, it's really sad. And I just feel like it's Black culture, brown culture, Islander Maldives. Like, it's this culture that needs to be broken and needs a cycle of, you know, which I think it is slowly, mm-hmm,
yeah,
but surely. But there's people like you, obviously, who, you know, are just breaking through the walls of, you know, people being like that. Which is really good, and I wish I could do that through hairdressing, but it's just such a different like industry to try and be like, I'm pushing more towards Black, you know, brown excellence hairdressers and just helping them, because obviously I've been through the roof of, you know, bad experiences of assisting and all that kind of stuff. So obviously I want to bring them up, and I feel like I'm doing that too.
Yeah, you are. Definitely. So everyone is kind of playing their position in a way. So like, I'm here talking about stuff, but you're being present. Like, I think your existence is your form of activism. So you're in spaces where we're not usually, and us seeing that, it does help everyone, because we usually don't see ourselves 100%, where you and go and who you work with.
Well, exactly. And that's what I want to like showcase, because like, no offense, but like, you know, brown people are never in the forefront of anything. And especially Australian hairdressing, it's all like Caucasian, but it's time for us to just stand up, because we have so much creativity.
Yeah.
It's just mind blowing. Like,
mm-hmm,
our ways of creativity and our ways of doing things just exceeds like some of the stuff that people are doing in the industry, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But thank you for that. But yeah, that's what I'm leaning towards, is just getting the industry and helping, you know, Pacific Islander, Māori, up and coming hairstylists become the forefront, because it's just trying to get into that door, which, you know, I'm trying and I'm still trying, but it was all those assisting jobs and all that kind of stuff, you know, the big names, just to try and get in there, because I just never was always chosen. Never. Yeah. But now I'm at a point where I'm just like,
come. Come.
Come, girl. Come see me work.
I mean, I've had the privilege of coming to some of your jobs and like, shadowing, and like, so that's been a huge thing for me in the past year, because I wouldn't normally go to these things. And
I know, and thank you so much.
It's been so fun.
Thank you for that.
Every time you ask, I'm like, yes, of course.
I know. So for those who don't know, obviously I do creative direction. So I do anything from like organizing content shoots for product companies. So if a product company comes to me and they're looking for a concept, I will deliver that. I will choose the models, I'll choose my team, and they'll come on board and we'll just shoot some amazing content. And, you know, it just didn't come in a day. It came from 8 years and 10 years not getting paid, but it was all that learning that I did on set, how many assistants I needed, what I needed, models that are going to, you know, perform well on the gram. All that becomes years of actually teaching your own self, because I didn't get taught that. I just got taught, I want to make sexy ass bomb images.
Yeah.
And obviously first thing was do hair first, because can't do hair, girl. How are you going to get sexy images? And then it's just, you know, when someone has that eye, it's like, it could just be the littlest tweak of hair that just like zhuzhes over the eye that makes them look high-end. What am I talking about?
Yeah.
But yeah, I like my imagery to become, you know, high-end, expensive, because once I deliver that, I deliver, you know, my rate is high.
And that's why
a lot of people always come to me, especially with my Instagram, and always just like, you know, you don't have enough brown girls. You don't have enough brown girls. You are a brown person. Like, aren't you meant to like bring everyone up? And to a point, yeah, I really do. But first of all, there's not a lot of brown models in Australia. Time will change, obviously, but I just want to make sure that I keep my Instagram looking. I've got my girl Trevor, who does brown excellent girls and all that kind of stuff, so I'm more than happy to send them good girls to him, because, you know, we're all winning in the same age. But I've just 13 years of experience, I've sort of just gone past. I would have done it back in my days, which I have. I'm just playing the game. And unfortunately, which is real sad, this industry, it's just like any brown girl that's on there, depending on their look, just doesn't get that much attraction, which is sad.
I mean, I can speak to that because I've witnessed you trying to cast for your online classes, and you had so much trouble trying to cast.
Always. And I'm always like to my girls, remember I was telling you, like, girl, like, do you know any brown skin girls? Like, I'm always asking my friends, like, is there any brown skin girls? Like, let's do this. But, you know, it comes down to an age where I'm also working with clientele, like clients. So if I don't perform well with delivering content, I just won't get booked the job again.
Yeah.
So it's a hard one, but once I do get a girl, it's like,
yeah. So when you came out, obviously you were out in queer spaces and being yourself.
Yeah.
Did that come with any sort of, did you feel like spaces were too white for you, or did you ever come across any sort of racism?
To be honest, babe. Oh, sorry, finish your question.
No, that was it. Yeah, did you come across any racism?
To be honest, like back in those days, I already had such black excellent girls around me and like a team and like a tribe of like brown people. Going into these white Caucasian type of environments, I actually didn't see it like that. I saw it more as like, oh, like, because I wasn't thinking of that when I was younger, to be honest. I was going through a different path, and my path was just me being there and experience what everyone's actually doing. Like, you know, guys touching guys, girls touching girls. And just like, even for me, I was in that club, like still not even understanding it. So yeah, I never really understood that until I met my girl Rocky, because she's always like, oh, it's too white. So I didn't really know. You know how I go. To me, people are people, and I get off people's energy and drive, so color doesn't matter to me. But I do understand when people are like, oh, you know, there's not enough colored people and stuff like that. But to me, back in those days, it just didn't really, it wasn't a thing.
Yeah, you had your other barriers to jump
over. I had my other, yeah, exactly.
When I come around the girls and like, because I'm really already shy and stuff like that, I see you girls, and you guys are so confident. And like everywhere we go, like no matter where, whereas like I tend to like, you know,
yeah, you're quite shy.
Tend to shrink. I'll shrink.
And do you mean like more social, like
I don't want to say social,
environments, like your quiet shy. And do you know what, babe? That was me.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for my hairdressing, and obviously my group of friends, I wouldn't be the person who I am. I would remember being an apprentice, and my clients can tell, like, can be the person to tell you that I was shy. I'd be like, hey, what would you like? And I wouldn't connect with them because I just didn't know who I was as a person. And I'd say the same questions. I'd be like, how's your day? Like, it was just very robotic because I wasn't, I didn't know who I was. I didn't know, like, myself. And so when I was getting clients, I'd be really scared. And whenever they'll talk about relationships or guys or girls or anything, I would just shut off because I just didn't know social ways of dealing with things. So if it wasn't for my hairdressing, dealing with clients every single day, I wouldn't be the person who I am. And I look back at videos and my speech and my talk is literally like, hey, how are you doing? I've never articulated myself properly because I was just like, and I was scared of who the person I was, and I hated my voice, and I hated this, I hated that. So yeah, getting over those things was, you know, looking, and when I used to assist really successful hairdressers, they were just so confident in going into the room and being that energy and being that force and being like, okay, I'm this person. And then everyone looks at you and they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's actually got it. And I feel like you need to be confident to be able to sell, just be your own, like, you know, brand. Obviously, I've now got a brand. We both have a brand. And it's how you come across is how your obviously brand is. And everyone knows me for, you know, high fashion and stuff like that. And obviously, I'm not high fashion. Yeah, I'm the most ghettoest person out. But like, and that's where people get confused because they see my Instagram and they think, oh my God, here he is. Like, he's living this mad lifestyle. But girl, to be honest, I'm actually quite real. But I just don't want to put my realness on my gram. And like,
yeah,
I just don't know what things to put on the gram.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, because, yeah, I forgot where the question was going. But yeah, so that's how I got my confidence. And to be honest, I'm still confident. Like, people think I'm confident.
I mean, you're known to, I think you're fake it till you make it personified, and that's not the first
time. I am.
Yeah.
Oh girl, I'm fake it till you make it every single day. Literally, like, I would do master classes, babe. Like, I'm not even an actual, like, I do makeup, I see it, I, like, you know, I've learned it. But when I got booked to do an online course for like a worldwide platform, you got me doing makeup and I'm just fully making it up. Like, it just comes down to connecting with who I was.
Yeah, it really is.
And I'm like just tapping around here underneath the eye. Oh, I don't even know the terms. Like, literally, it's just about making it up and it's just about connecting, because once you connect with people, they don't care about your...
They'll eat it up. They'll eat it all up.
Underneath the eye, yeah, fine. Like, I don't know what that is. And I'm just like... just shadowing this here, and I've got one of girl, and I had Ray Morris, who is one of Australia's biggest makeup artists, watching me, and I'm just dying inside because they were like, Ray Morris has a question, and I'm like, hey Ray, how are you doing, babe? I love your work. You're such an inspiration. She is, but her watching me, I was like, growl.
Do you remember her question?
You can't fake it now. Nah, but as long as you know skin tone, as long as you know the vision, and I'm always about vision, and I see how makeup sits on skin, because I've been teaching myself for 8 years in front of the camera and seeing it and looking, and okay, let's do Vaseline on the lids because it glosses it up and makes them look sexy. You know, it's just little tips like that. Yeah, I might not be trained, but I have the eye.
What's been the most challenging thing for you as a gay Maori person, just in the scene and just in general in life?
I reckon my upbringing, to be honest. I reckon the most challenging thing was me not being myself for that so many years, and not coming out to my family and being my authentic self. And that was a challenge where I was just like, you know what, I just wish I was myself to them because I'm shutting off. I'm just asking them questions. I'm not myself. Yeah. How's your day? Yeah, good, auntie. But now my auntie's, oh, my auntie's and that are like, how's your day? And I'm like, girl.
Yeah.
Like it's been, you know, it's more real because I can just express my actual true authentic self. So that was an actual challenge for me, like me coming out and being my true self. And even talking to my like guy cousins now, like I go to parties and stuff like that. I'm like cracking out laughing because I connect with them. I'm more mature.
Yeah.
And I just don't have that negative energy space around me where I was scared to even, you know, talk because around
even them. Because even they don't know how to act because you're not acting the way you like, you're not being yourself.
You're and not so yourself.
They're just they're tippy-toeing around you as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
Most of our lives we weren't ourselves. And now that like you're really living your best life.
Oh my god, I'm living my best life, but I'm also nourishing relationships with my family that I never had.
Yeah.
And me
talk about that because you just came back from a trip in New Zealand where you were with
so you know what, my brother started a relationship in a family so young, and once he ended up finding, once mum told me that him, my brother Eddie and my mum were going to New Zealand, I was just like, you know what, I'm not connected with my brother in so long, I'm coming. And I'm going to book a camper van with us, a luxurious one, because I'm that person that doesn't want to be in a car stuck like that. So I was just like, oh my God, do you reckon I can come? But we're getting a camper van. And they're like, let's do it. Yeah. So I ended up going and I reconnected with my brother and my mom as well. And it's so funny because my mom's really, love her to death, but she's very, she's a hard woman. She's come from obviously a hard background. She's still like that. And it's so funny because my brother is total opposite of him being like, he asks the same question about 10 times.
Yeah.
So it's just like, oh, so do I use credit when I'm like putting my card in? And we're like, yeah, bro. And he's like, so do I have to push credit? You know, he says it like 10 times. And we're like, oh my God, yes. Like now he's me being an independent person, teaching them, thinking they knew, but they actually don't. So I don't know where I was going with that. Oh, so reconnecting with my parents, my mom and my brother, which is absolutely, oh my God, it was such an amazing trip. And just as I got back was when they shut everything down.
Yeah.
They locked out. But yeah, like my parents don't, my dad, I connected with my dad on such a whole new level, like oh my gosh, we talk about everything and anything. And he's just like, one time he just said, he came back and he's just like, son, we went to a drag show. And I was like, get it? And he's just like, yeah. And they picked me out of the audience and I was like, so it's just reconnecting, like doing these things that I missed out as a kid doing, you know. So which is exciting. So reconnecting and nourishing that relationship with my whole family. My cousin Naya, who's one of my favorite cousins, I've always been like that. Even my cousin Jacob. So we've like got this really tight family niche of just like fucking positivity, of just everything. And we grow as a family and we build each other up and we're everyone's biggest supporters now.
Oh, I love that.
It's good. Yeah, which is mad.
Did you have any advice for any queer, young, brown people who may be listening?
Keep grinding and keep working. And don't let anyone tell you this is the right way or this is the wrong way, unless they've walked the path. Maybe listen, educate yourself every single day and you're going to grow as an individual, as an artist, and you're going to get to the places where you never even think that you would go. Make mistakes, girl. You know, you might do something wrong, but you've learned from that mistake. So it's just like making mistakes, do your thing, get your friends involved, like just build each other
practice
up.
Practice on them.
You know, practice on them, girl, with all my girlfriends. Thank you. Wouldn't be the artist I was without them. But literally, girl, they made me grow as a person. I was just like, girl, we're going to do a Rihanna red haircut on Kayla. I was just like, she didn't want short and choppy. I was like, babe, what do you want? She's just like, just a straight cut. And I was like, "Bet." And she's like, "I don't want short and choppy." Ah, girl, she got short and choppy. I had my girl Lika, who was just like, "Girl, I want this hair." Go, always gone. Like, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be the person who I, the artist that I am as now, because they were the ones that, you know, they were the guinea pigs of my whole apprenticeship and my clients. So all my clients, all my, and even my bosses that I've worked at, my parents and my grandma.
Yeah.
They've just been the foundation of, you know, me being an artist and who I am as a person today.
Oh, I love that. Is there anything else you wanted to say before we wrap up?
I just want to say thank you so much for having me, Coco. Queer Coco.
Oh,
you've been such a big inspiration, and I love seeing you grow as an individual, as an artist. Your growth, oh my gosh, seeing you grow as a person from being that person like, "Hey girl," to now, it's just been amazing, and I just can't wait to see you flourish as an artist and be that, how to be that spokesperson for the community. Been amazing, and you are amazing.
Oh, I love you. But yeah, I want to say thank you for your time. I know she's busy, even though we're in lockdown.
No, and she ain't busy. 2 months of her jobs have gone down the drain.
But I love you so much. You're an inspiration to me, and I
love you too so much, Boo.
And you know, I take on all of your advice, no matter what. Like, even if I'm not confident in what I'm gonna do, I'm just like, no. Shannon said to do it, so I have to do it.
Oh, you're so cute. Oh my God! Thanks everyone for watching, and thank you for having me. I wish you guys all the best, and we are out of lockdown.